This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. In 1977, NASA launched two space probes, Voyager 1 and 2. Voyager 1 became the first spacecraft to exit the solar system in 2013, and Voyager 2 should follow this year. It's the only spacecraft to have visited all four giant outer planets in the solar system. Jim Bell's a professor in the School of Earth and Space Exploration at Arizona State University, an adjunct professor in the Department of Astronomy at Cornell University, and the president of the Planetary Society. His latest book is The Interstellar Age, Inside the 40-Year Voyager Mission. He joins us to discuss the importance of the Voyager mission 40 years ago and today. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jim, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Great to be on the program, Mark.
Jim, how far have Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 traveled from the Earth at this point?
So they are more than 10 billion, with a B, miles away. Voyager 1 is 130 times as far as the Earth is from the Sun, and Voyager 2 is almost 110 times as far away. And they're traveling at just phenomenal speeds of approximately 10 miles per second, which, you know, if you imagine them traveling through your neighborhood at 10 miles per second, that's just unbelievable. But they've been accelerated first by the rocket that took them off the Earth and then by the giant planets themselves as they swung past.
And this is all mind-boggling. This is the farthest that any human-made object has ever gone out into space, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. And they've, as you said in your introduction, they have popped out of, at least Voyager 1 has popped out of the bubble that surrounds the Sun. The Sun, like all stars, has a spherical bubble of magnetic fields and solar wind particles that surround the star. And in 2012, Voyager 1 popped out of that bubble into the space between the stars. Voyager 2 is expected to pop out this year or next year. And this is the first time that we've been able to measure directly what it's like in interstellar space.
Now, how long can the Voyager probes keep running, and how much farther are there expectations as to how much farther they're going to go?
Yeah, they are nuclear-powered, and that power supply is predicted to last another decade or so until the mid to late 2020s. As long as that power level is high enough to keep the heaters and instruments running, we'll be in contact with them. But after that, power levels get too low, it gets too cold, and something's just going to break in the cold environment of space. But they will keep going. They won't be in contact with us anymore, but they'll keep going. There are no obstacles in the way. They're not headed for any particular star or planet. They've got an enormous amount of momentum, traveling very fast. They're escape above the escape velocity of the Sun, so they will leave, continue to separate away from the Sun. And they're just like the Sun now, in orbit around the center of the Milky Way. So they'll keep going. There's no erosion. There's no rain. There's no snow. They could last tens, hundreds of millions of years or more.
Now, what kind of instrumentation is aboard the two Voyager probes?
You know, there's cameras that have given us a close-up views of the Great Red Spot and the rings of Saturn and the moons of the outer solar system. But there's also what I call squiggly line instruments that measure magnetic fields and look at cosmic rays and other kinds of maybe a little bit more esoteric science than images. But that's important, too, to understand the details of what these places are like.
Have the Voyager probes made any discoveries that came as surprises to scientists?
Oh, yeah, lots. For example, we didn't know before the Voyagers that all four giant planets have rings. We thought just Saturn had rings.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know that Jupiter's innermost moon, Io, is volcanically active. It has more active volcanoes than the Earth does. And we didn't know that Jupiter's moon, Europa, has a subsurface ocean that likely has more salty ocean water than all the oceans on the Earth. And we didn't know that Saturn's large moon Titan has this thick atmosphere, thicker than the Earth's atmosphere, made out of hydrocarbons, and maybe what the early Earth's atmosphere was like. There are dozens of small moons that were discovered by the Voyagers because it was close to their planets that we can't see those moons from the Earth. So an enormous number of discoveries, first-time events, really rewriting the textbooks in the outer solar system.
Now, there was a dual purpose to the Voyager mission. It was not just for exploration, but weren't these craft also to serve as emissaries of the Earth?
Exactly. One of the brainchilds of the astronomer Carl Sagan was to include time capsules or messages, almost like a message in a bottle. You know that this piece of technology is going to leave our solar system, so let's put a little time capsule on each one that preserves a record of life and culture on our planet in the mid-1970s. So each spacecraft carries a record, a phonograph record, an LP, old-school technology, along with a needle and instructions in pictures and diagrams for how to play the record. And on that record are a great selection of music, classical, jazz, indigenous, rock and roll, a collection of greetings and from world leaders, from children, and a collection of photos that sort of a snapshot of life on Earth, typical life and our architecture and scenes of our planet, kind of like a greatest hits concept album for planet Earth in the mid-1970s.
So Carl Sagan played a role in picking the things that went on this trip.
He played a big role. He was a scientist, a member of the camera team, and so he was thinking about the scientific results. But, of course, he was a great public communicator and interested in bringing the public along on this voyage. And what better way than to have some sort of representative sights and sounds of our planet really, you know, etched forever into the cosmos.
So there were several musical selections. I think they ranged from classical to rock and roll. And I think the rock was Johnny B. Good, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was, you know, a bunch of people wanted the Beatles on there.
Yeah.
And they were big, and they had broken up by the mid-70s, but they were still big. And the Beatles wanted to be on the record as well. There was talk about Here Comes the Sun, for example. And the problem was the Beatles' lawyers, not the Beatles. And some of those folks are still the problem today for distributing their stuff. So there's nothing wrong with Chuck Berry, though. Chuck Berry is just, you know, great, quintessential rock and roll, foundational kind of stuff. So I think that music is really representative of some important part of our culture, musical culture today.
So as the Voyager probes, Jim, keep going farther and farther out, are they likely to encounter anything as they go deeper into space?
You know, they're not. They're not likely to encounter anything else, just from a probability perspective. They're not headed towards any particular star. They're not headed towards any planets that we know of. There's really nothing out there in space, occasional dust grain or stray hydrogen molecule. So they are likely to continue on for the foreseeable future without any, you know, erosion or anything to interact with or crash into.
That is amazing. Has Voyager played a role in the debate over whether Pluto should be called a planet again?
You know, it has, not directly with Pluto, because it hasn't encountered Pluto, but by observing and studying the moons of the giant planets and realizing that many of those moons are really planets in their own right. You know, for example, there's a moon around Jupiter called Ganymede. It's the largest moon in the solar system. It's larger than the planet Mercury. It's had a complex geologic history. It might have a subsurface ocean. It just happens to be orbiting around Jupiter, and I don't think we should think of it any less because of where it is. I judge a planet based on what it is, especially what it's like inside. So in my reckoning, there's 35 or 40 planets in our solar system. Some of them happen to be orbiting other planets, and that's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty impressive that the Voyager mission is closing in on 40 years. This has to be NASA's longest-running mission.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, many of the team members, the project management, all that are really aiming for 50. 50 would be an incredible benchmark. To keep a mission running for 50 years would really set the bar high for all future missions.
Who are some of the key people who've been involved in the Voyager mission? Carl Sagan, we know, obviously, but who are some of the others?
Right. Probably the most important other is Ed Stone. He's the project scientist. He's a professor at Caltech and a cosmic ray scientist. He studies space weather. And Ed has been the project scientist since the beginning of the project. I call Ed the king of Voyager. He's had this benevolent rule over the Voyager empire for four decades now, trying to keep this, like, herding cats group of scientists together and focused on mission success and balancing the needs of one part of the team, camera people, against another part of the team, maybe magnetic fields people. And the issue with Voyager has always been it's a flyby. You go past everything once. You get one shot. There's high stakes, high pressure, lots of competition for time during that one shot. And so Ed has been the guy to adjudicate all that and keep the peace among all the teams. He's done a great job.
What drove the Voyager team back in 1977? What continues to drive them to this day to stay excited and enthusiastic about this mission?
You know, the team has, there's been a lot of turnover. People retire, new generations come in, and some people are focused on certain things. And so, you know, for example, the people who are interested in the geology aren't really involved in the project anymore because there's nothing to look at that has geology. But people interested in magnetic fields are still really excited because they're looking at the magnetic field of interstellar space. So people have come and gone, and in fact, the current project manager, Susie Dodd, started when she was just fresh out of college on this project, kind of working in the trenches, and she's worked her way up to become the overall leader of the project. So it's really been an intergenerational kind of mission.
We have about 30 seconds left, Jim. What do you see as the future of space exploration?
You know, NASA and other space agencies are still doing a lot of very cool exploration with robots like the Voyagers, Mars rovers, orbiters around Saturn, future Mars landers. And so that's going to continue to be the future. And I think we're seeing NASA now start to spread its wings about getting back into deep space, rebuilding the capability in the Saturn V, for example, with new rockets to get beyond low Earth orbit, back to the moon, onto asteroids, onto Mars.
Jim, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Great to be on the program.
Scientist Jim Bell, he's author of the new book, The Interstellar Age, Inside the 40-Year Voyager Mission. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier with help from Kevin Reynolds. The technical director was Rick Andres. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, up next on 91.7 WVXU.